Welcome to the Blue Jays from Away podcast, episode 58.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins, it's a current of love.
Today on the podcast, we talk Blue Jays prospects with Doug Fox of Clutchlings. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays from Away podcast. Welcome back to the Blue Jays from Away podcast. We're brought to you by the 2016 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook and the premium content section of Blue Jays from Away. This year's edition features profiles of over 200 players in the Toronto Blue Jays organization while giving you all of the info you need to follow the Blue Jays minor leaguers in action. The premium content section has photos, videos, and scouting reports to supplement the profiles. The 2016 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook and the Blue Jays from Away premium content section. We've got you covered. Welcome back to the Blue Jays from Away podcast. Today we talk about the Blue Jays prospects with Clutchlings. Welcome to the podcast once again, Doug Fox.
Thank you as always for having me. It's great to be talking Blue Jays prospects with you.
So I'll just start off by saying that I think that this year was not the most exciting year for prospect watchers. What do you have to say about that subject?
Two words, Vladdy Jr. I think... The system, as we all know, was emptied of a considerable amount of its upper level depth by Alex Anthopoulos and his yard sale at the trade deadline last year, and I think the system has been restocked nicely and has rebounded nicely. But Vladdy Jr., I know I'm really getting ahead of myself here, perhaps, but man, I think we are looking at the best bat, if not the best prospect, the Blue Jays have ever produced. And I don't say that lightly because I have been a Blue Jays fan since day one, but the reports I've had from him and the video that I've seen all summer long are very tantalizing. And that gives me so much to look forward to, the thought that he may be at Lansing next April. That really might help me get through the winter.
Well, it'll definitely be worth the drive to Lansing, as they say. I had a chance to see him in Bluefield this year, and, you know, I mean, the guy is just so impressive. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to see him take BP because the club was getting a lot of rain in Bluefield right around that time, and I was talking to some other scouts from other teams who were looking forward to seeing him, and again, they were having the same issue. No BP, but they loved what they saw of him during the game, and, you know, every time I would ask another scout about him, you know, it was pretty amazing how they would rave about everything, and then they'd say, oh yeah, and he's just 17 years old, and he's still, you know, driving in game-winning runs with sacrifice flies and taking the ball the other way and, you know, hitting the ball right to the wall going the other way to, like, right center field. He's a right-handed hitter, and turning on certain pitches, and just his maturity and his surprising speed and decent ability in the field. Yes. You know, he's certainly not there yet, but for someone who the Jays are trying to, you know, keep at third base, you know, he's pretty good. He's got enough arm. You know, the scouts that I talked to would sort of classify it as average in terms of his arm, as in the terms of a major league average arm for a third baseman. So they think that he has the arm to stick at third base, but, you know, just the reviews that I got from him, and as well as seeing him, you know, he hits the ball with such authority, and it sounds different off his bat. It's one of those cliche things that people are going to tell you about him. So I think, yes, he was very excited, but for me, looking big picture, I think there's a lot of misses in the last couple of seasons in the draft and in the international free agent classes, aside from Vladimir Guerrero, seeing the club in Bluefield, you know, there was a lot of swing and miss in that club. And these were guys that were mostly selected either this year or last year. And I can see some of these players getting into a little more trouble as they move up. I didn't see the Vancouver club this year, but they were not a good team, and they certainly haven't returned to their glory years like they have been, I think, so from about 2012 through about 2014 and 15, yeah. Really. Let's go to see who else you are excited about.
Well, but before we do that, let me just ask you, having been in Bluefield, a name that really popped up in August is the Appalachian League home run and RBI leader, Bradley Jones. I know he's a little old for that level, but the Blue Jays seem to be able, going back even to the days of Chip Cannon, to find these kind of bats. What are your thoughts? What's your projection for him?
Jones is a really tough guy to project. He doesn't have the build of a typical power hitter. I mean, he gets great loft on the ball, and he's got a very quick swing. But as I said, you know, there's a lot of swing and miss in his game. I think he struck out about 27, 28 times. He's a little old for the level, but he's not that old. He was, I think, a junior coming out of the College of Charleston. And, I mean, there's a lot of things about his game that I really like. I think he's a great defender. He played at first base quite a bit because Vladdy was entrenched as the third baseman, but when I did see him play third, he was very good, and he has really great footwork around the bag as a first baseman. So my concerns with him are kind of, I'd like to see him walk more, number one. Number two, I don't know about cutting down his swing because that might sap his power, but maybe if he made a little more contact, I think I'd be less concerned about how he hits against better pitching, where they're going to throw, you know, better breaking balls that look juicier until they're out of the zone. Or, I'm very curious to see how he's going to do. I don't know if they'll move him to Lansing next year. I think he might have to show a little bit more in terms of a willingness to be more selective within the strike zone, take a few more walks, really figure out what pitch he wants to hit and then go after that one, and be a little more discriminating about what pitches he chooses to really commit on. So for me, that's sort of my scouting report on Bradley Jones. I mean, he's a really great guy. I talked to him, and you can find the interview on our podcast. Really, really nice guy, really sort of mature, head on his shoulders. But again, I think there may be some growing pains as he moves up in the system.
Interesting. Thank you for that. Yeah, that name definitely jumped out. And he and Vladdy apparently had a bit of a home run hitting competition going on until August, when Jones pulled away. But they were very close, which is very interesting, because a 21, 22-year-old North American with a 17-year-old, although born in Montreal, raised in Dominican, but apparently they were very close friends.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you know, Vladdy is a very gregarious young man. It's hard to call him a man because he's so young. But, you know, whenever I'd be doing an interview with one of the players and he walked by, he would, you know, try to crack up the player. And Bradley Jones was one of them, and definitely trying to get a nice laugh out of him. I think Kyle Weatherly was the other one who was in the firing line of Vladdy's goofiness. So he's definitely having a lot of fun playing baseball, and I think he gets along with everybody, really.
Fantastic. And the thing we have to keep in mind about Vladdy is, if he was raised stateside, he'd be going into his senior year of high school. But what did he do for his summer vacation? Well, he more than held his own against pitchers 2, 3, or more years older than himself. So when we talk about prospects who have me excited for the future, he is top of the list. I think we're still going to have to wait a while before we see him, if ever, in a major league uniform. But, man, I'm going to enjoy the ride with him.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, he's ambitious on his own. And, I, you know, talking to Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, I think Jesse thinks that Vladdy is going to be in a Lugnuts uniform next year, and I can see the appeal of having him play in Vancouver, but I have a feeling that I'm with Jesse a little bit on this. I think he will be in Lansing next
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. The reports I had on him talked about his strike zone judgment. He didn't expand his strike zone, even with two strikes. He, as you said, he hit the ball to all fields. He has just elite bat speed. Who knows? He's still so far away from the major leagues. But my goodness, the building blocks are certainly there. And the fact that he was at least adequate defensively, and hopefully that's only going to improve as he works on his body, as he works on his conditioning. This organization through Rowdy Tellez and Roberto Osuna has definitely demonstrated that they can help with that. So I'm very excited again to see what the future holds for him. The stolen bases are interesting. I believe he stole 15, and I had a pretty good correspondence all summer long with Bailey Angle, who is a Virginia Tech broadcasting student heading into his senior year. And what did he do for his summer vacation? Well, he was the play-by-play voice and the media relations director for the Bluefield Blue Jays. But Bailey and I had a good correspondence all summer long, and he suggested that Vladdy's stolen base totals probably owed more just to base running smarts and kind of stealing when nobody else expected it, because it sounds like Dennis Holmberg gave him fairly much a green light. So I don't know if it's blazing speed that was responsible for that, but that just to me just demonstrates the high baseball IQ. Will he replicate that at the higher levels? Maybe not, but it shows he knows how to run the bases.
Yeah, I mean, seeing him run, his top speed is not bad. But he's not the quickest getting there. He's almost like Rowdy Tellez, and he's sort of the next guy I wanted to talk about. But he's a little like Rowdy Tellez. Rowdy stole a few bases this year. He stole four, and everybody says, oh, Rowdy's slow, Rowdy can't run. You know, he's not as slow as you might think. And I think the same goes for Vladdy Guerrero.
And you know that I've been on the Tellez bandwagon since his first pro season, but my feeling about him has always been is that he's more than a one-dimensional slugger. Yes, he's hit some tape measure home runs. Yes, he's hit some towers, light towers in batting practice and put on a show. But this is a guy who is striving to be a complete ball player. He said that he's about 40 pounds lighter now than he was in his senior year of high school. He really has worked on his agility. He has become a fairly decent first baseman. I watched him make a play on online this summer, running down the first base line, grabbed a pop-up that was looked over his shoulder, grabbed it, but then had the presence of mind, knowing that there was a runner on third, turned around quickly, ran the ball back into the infield just in case that runner was tempted to tag. That, to me, that was a major league play. And that said to me that Tellez really has developed so many aspects of his game. He's not going to get any faster. We know that. And we know the Blue Jays want to take it easy with him. But I have begun to think this fall that barring some developments with the major league team, and after today, wow, it's very difficult. Even though this team is still in the thick of the playoff hunt, it's hard to be optimistic about the next few weeks with this team. And you have to wonder what kind of reconstruction of the roster may take place over the course of the winter. And who knows? As much as they've taken it one time at a time with one level at a time with Rowdy, maybe we see him in a major league uniform next year. And wouldn't that be great? Because I think he's that close to being ready. He's done everything the organization pretty much has asked.
Well, I'm actually fairly much in agreement with you. I'm just doing some math in my head right now to see if the Blue Jays have to add him to the roster this year.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
Well, am I okay?
Because he signed as an 18-year-old, which means they get that fifth year.
And you know what? Having said that, and I don't have my notes in front of me tonight, but I do believe that I'd written earlier this year that there is no rush. Yes, and you are correct. I stand correct. There's no rush with him because they don't have to put him on the 40-man until next year.
Exactly. And so, you know, thinking about what Rowdy did, I mean, I'm just sort of looking over his stats throughout the season, and he had a 706 OPS in April. He had an 855 OPS in May. In June, he had 920. In July, it was 950, and in August, he hit 8 of his home runs and had a 1.046 OPS in that month, hitting 333. And that's the kind of growth that you want to see. It's rarely so linear as it was with Rowdy Tellez this year, but that's really the kind of growth we want to see. And, you know, in that last month, he took 15 walks and struck out 19 times, which shows you that, you know, pitchers were being very careful with him, number one. And number two, he was able to recognize that. And, you know, I heard him in some interviews basically saying exactly the same thing. He says, you know, the pitchers know what I can do now. They're being much more careful with me. Yeah. I just have to wait for my pitch and hit it. And it looked like with 10 doubles and 8 home runs in the month of August, it really looks like he's figured things out and figured out how to do what he can with what pitchers give him.
I think the thing that impresses me the most about Tellez is his approach. Back in April, when I think he was hitting 164 at the end of the month and was not seeing a lot of strikes because nobody in his New Hampshire lineup around him was hitting, he still was patient enough to draw walks at about a 40%, or he was on base about a 40% clip or thereabouts, which just says that he was not expanding his strike zone. There was an excellent article, I don't know if you saw it or not, in FanGraphs just a couple of weeks ago, an interview where he talked about his two-strike approach. And unlike a lot of players today who will still be taking their hacks down two strikes, with his two-strike approach, he talked about in a FanGraphs interview about how he shortens his leg kick and he's willing to go the other way with the ball. You know, when we were kids, we were taught to choke way up on that bat and do whatever you can to make contact with two strikes. Well, Rowdy's not doing that, but at the same time, he's not taking his hacks with two strikes. He is changing in his approach, trying to take what the pitcher gives him in that case. And I think, once again, that's something that bodes so well for the future. And I think he certainly is going to be, until Vladdy comes along, he's going to be the best hitting prospect the Blue Jays have developed since, let's say, Aaron Hill or Adam Lynn.
All right, so let's say you had to build a top five prospects right now, and let's say Rowdy and Vladdy are in there. Who would round out the other three in your top five?
Well, funny you should mention that, because I have been working on it, working on my top 10, and I think it's pretty easy to say that those are 1-2. Anthony Alford is still in the picture for me. This was a learning year for him. He readily admits that. He had a decent second half. He's going to the Arizona Fall League, where I think we're really going to get a very good read on him. And I know he is really looking forward to the challenge from having spoken to him on Twitter. So Alford is still there in the conversation for me with number three. Things came to him so easily last year that he was bound for a bit of adversity, and that's not a bad thing to happen for prospects if they treat it as a learning experience. He had difficulty staying healthy in the first half, but had a decent second half, cut down on the strikeouts, went from, I think, about 35% to 37% actually in the first half to 25% in the second half. Would still like to see that a little bit lower, but he hit 7 home runs in the second half, and that's very encouraging. So I would put Alford in there. Sean Reed Foley, I think, has to be in the conversation. He was shut down after, I believe, about August 12th, but was dominant at two levels this year. Learned a new delivery in Instructs last year and went back to Lansing, finished at Dunedin. Reports are that he's throwing again and that everything's fine and that it was precautionary. But, man, a guy who can command both sides of the plate with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, man, and secondary pitches that are coming along. And I think, most importantly, he learned this year to finally start to make some mechanical adjustments, maybe because his delivery was simplified, but making those adjustments from inning to inning, pitch to pitch sometimes, whereas he wasn't able to in the past, and he started walking guys, driving up his pitch count. Next thing you know, he was out of the game in the fourth or the fifth inning. And then a guy who's been under the radar a little bit, but we really have to take a step back and look at the year he had and think this is a guy we might be seeing in the big leagues, and if not next year, then the year after. But Richie Urania, he hit well at two levels. He missed the last month of the season. The Florida State League was still their all-star shortstop. Went up to New Hampshire, didn't miss a beat, has improved on his hitting from the right-hand side, has improved on his pitch recognition, still a work in progress there. But man, if I am a fan at Buffalo, I'm looking forward to Tellez, Connor Green, Urania, maybe even Reed Foley in the lineup next year. But I think that would be my top five.
It's a very interesting top five. First of all, I think Alford is definitely there. He oozes athleticism. And the fact is, he's not nearly as old as everybody might think he is. He still just turned 22 a couple months ago. And in baseball years, because of the missed time due to his college football dalliances, I guess, he's still very young in baseball terms. And I agree. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how he does in the Australian League, that's where he was last year, but in the Arizona Fall League. I might even place Reed Foley higher. I'm very high on him. Last year I had very mixed thoughts. I saw him, I think, three times over the course of the season, and I was really sort of down on his command and his control, and I think everybody else realized that, hence the mechanical adjustments. This year when I saw him in spring training, I said he's going to last a month in the Midwest League. He's going to just tear it up. I told that to Jesse Goldberg-Strasser, their opening series, which unfortunately I didn't get to see any baseball because most of it was snowed out. but I told Jesse, I said, this guy's just, from what I saw, his slider is way better than it was the year before. His changeup, he actually was throwing it, and I'd never seen it the year before. So here's a guy, he's going to come back to the Midwest League, and he's just going to eat it up for dinner. And he did. And he went to the Florida State League, and he continued that, walking only 16 batters in 57 innings with 71 strikeouts. I mean, he just took it up a notch. And this is a guy who will sit, 93 to 95 with movement, and he can hit those corners now. So I might even have him above Alford. He's, I think, the only premium pitching prospect the Jays really have who is sort of on an upward trajectory. I think Connor Green, a lot of people had him there, and his 97 mile an hour fastball is really tantalizing. But when I saw him in spring training, he was really struggling to throw strikes, especially with his off speed pitches. And I think, especially pitching in Double A, again, he's not an old guy. He's maybe 21. I think had a learning season where he really had to learn how to pitch and how to get his pitches over and make pitcher's pitches as opposed to just throwing it down the middle and daring people to hit it.
And that brings up to me an interesting point. And I was told this year by a Blue Jays official that prospects are not going to, we're not going to necessarily see the three or four level jumps, that prospects they're sent to each level with a list of things that they have to work on. And it's not until everybody who has seen them, whether it's coaching staff with the team they're at or minor league roving instructing staff or even executives from the front office who've had an opportunity to see the prospect firsthand for themselves, they're not moving up until they have checked off the list of things that they had to work on, which I think is one of the big differences from the Anthopoulos regime. And I think they showed they're not afraid to send a Reed Foley back to Lansing or a Green back to Dunedin and say, guys, there are still aspects of your game that you have to work on. Having said that, I saw Reed Foley pitch in an exhibition game with the Double-A training camp guys against the Double-A Phillies guys, and I was very impressed with his delivery even then. I was seeing it from a different angle, so I didn't realize until I checked some video exactly how much simplified and streamlined that it was from last year. But man, he just looked dynamite in the Phillies hitters on that occasion. It was, of course, only about a three or four inning stint. They could not touch him. So I certainly wouldn't argue with you about him being possibly ahead of Alford at this point, but more importantly, yes, likely the best pitching prospect in the organization right now.
All right. Who's your big surprise of the year? And you can have, a couple if you think you can't contain it to one or two.
Big surprise of the year. Hard to say because I feel like I know so much about these guys that I'm confident in a number of them. But I guess if we had to kind of separate them into two classes. One would be existing farmhands, and then one that came into the organization this year. I think John Harris surprised me. We knew the talent was there, but he definitely had a difficult first pro season in the Northwest League. And even though a lot of people put it off into fatigue, I'd actually talked to one scout via the magic of Twitter who had suggested that there were parts of his delivery that he's never really been a big fan of, just opening up a little bit too much of the front shoulder, getting out of sync. And I did notice that, again, through the miracle of online games, Hillsborough does a great job in the Northwest League of televising their home games. So I had an opportunity to watch Harris pitch last year and check some of that video against a video from Lansing this year. And he has, I wouldn't say altered the delivery. The differences are subtle, but it's not as violent at the ending, and he's a little bit more compact and a little bit more direct to the plate. But, man, he was lights out in Lansing, a scoreless inning streak of, what, 32 or 33 straight innings, and wore down a little bit as the season progressed with Dunedin. But I think he definitely is as advertised. So I was pleasantly surprised to see how he fared. I guess another name that really jumped out at me was Bo Bichette. I will go out on a limb and give a hint, foreshadow my top 10 prospects, but Bo Bichette makes it into my top 10 prospects. I know it was Keith Law who said just last week, check the numbers, and Bo Bichette's brother had a pretty sensational debut in the Gulf Coast League in 2011, and I think he's got a career average of about .248 since then, and is pretty much a non-prospect in the Yankees organization. But man, everything that I heard about Bichette says this is an impact bat in the making, position maybe being a little bit of a question, but he would be another name from this year's class that jumped out at me. He is going to instructs. I had wondered if they're going to work a little bit on his swing mechanics, because I know scouts were a little concerned about his setup is a little unorthodox. But Gil Kim told me in an email just today that no, they're quite happy with his swing mechanics, and he's going to instructs to basically make up for the time he missed this summer when he was out for about 5 weeks after an emergency appendectomy. And I'm going to throw one more name, and I don't know, he's not a top 10 guy. I don't even know if he fits in the top 20, because I haven't begun thinking about guys 11 to 20 yet for me. But I got a chance. Vancouver televises their Saturday night games through Shaw Television. And I think they did 6 this year. And lo and behold, I discovered them on YouTube one day. So I had a great deal of fun watching those telecasts of those 6 seed games. And the player who just kept standing out to me both sides of the ball was Josh Palacios, who I believe was drafted in the 4th round this year. But man, he's an athlete. He has bat speed. He has strike zone judgment. He gets from first to third quicker than you would believe, and he runs like a gazelle. And there's just, that's a top shelf athlete, and how he lasted in the 4th round with that kind of athleticism is kind of intriguing to me and interesting to me. But there's a name just to stick away for the future. I'm sure we'll be in Lansing next year, and maybe there are holes in his game that weren't exposed so much in the Northwest League. But man, there's a guy I'm really interested, really intrigued to follow next year.
Well, Palacios is definitely somebody who was on my radar very early. You know, I was talking with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler about him when we actually pulled out some paper and were sort of trying to project the 2017 Lugnuts opening day roster. And Palacios was definitely on that list, and saying, you know, I really hope we get to see him this year. He's been tearing it up in Vancouver, and absolutely. I mean, hitting .355 with a .437 OBP and .473 slugging in just 28 games, you know, really gives you an idea that this guy has some definitely impressive contact ability. He also hit .342 with the Lugnuts in 9 games. So that's definitely a guy. And I think this year's draft has proven to be, since we're talking about Palacios, who was taken in the 4th round, the hitters that the Blue Jays took early on this year,
yes,
really have all made impacts, whether it's Kevin Biggio in the 5th round, or J.B. Woodman and Bo Bichette in the 2nd, or I believe there was one other hitter in that group. You know, they had they had more hitters have great first professional seasons this year than I think in any other year. And for a club that has really been going after pitching over the past several years with their draft, with Brian Parker in particular, and under the Alex Anthopoulos regime, it's definitely a departure in terms of philosophy, and it seems like they just couldn't miss on any of those guys.
Interesting you say that. My thoughts exactly. You can't argue with some of the hits that Parker had during his time, but I think one of the side effects was that there certainly was a lack of position players, of quality position players in terms of depth at the big league levels, because they were so focused on getting those high school pitchers, getting them into the organization, working on their mechanics. This year, I wonder, be interesting to see long term whether this year was a bit of an aberration, or is this the direction that they're going to go? Was the purpose in drafting, say, a Woodman or a Palacios this year because they wanted to upgrade the depth of talent that they had of position players, particularly outfielders? Will they maybe go back next year to high school players? Very hard to say, but you certainly can't argue with any of their top five picks. I think that's a very impressive group. So J.B. Woodman was just a guy who I wasn't impressed the times I saw him online, but anytime I looked at the numbers, in particular the ones he put up in 9 games with Lansing at the end of the year, like the team has really done, as I had said earlier, they've done a really good job of restocking the system. It'll be interesting to see if that's the kind of athlete, the college athlete that they go to in years to come. Do they go back to the high schoolers? I don't know, but it's tough to argue with the results of this year's group, that's for sure.
Well, again, it's early, and, you know, when you've got the guy who led the Appalachian League in home runs, you've got, you know, Kevin Biggio, who was an all-star, and I think Woodman was also an all-star in the Northwest League,
yep.
And, you know, TJ Zoik, who, you know, I think he may be suffering a little bit from the same sort of issues that Josh Harris was. He's also a very tall young man at 6'7", so generally, the taller pitchers will take a little more time to figure out their coordination and mature on the mound. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting group of players to follow. And, you know, I think we say this every year. It's always important to follow them and not just sort of react to their first years, although it's a little bit easier to get excited after their first years of this group of players than it necessarily may have been in the past.
Absolutely. I would agree with on that. A name too, he's not a hitter, but a pitcher that I'm also high on, Zach Jackson, taken in the fourth round. Here's a guy who, if he sticks with the bullpen, and it sounds like that's going to be the case, this is a guy who could rise through the system quickly. And that's just another hit from this year's draft.
Alrighty. So, you know, a couple of the guys that I saw this year who I think broke out a little bit and impressed me, they're generally players who have been in the system a little bit longer. And one of them is a really great guy, and having interviewed him a couple times and spoken to him, is Jason Levlebigian. He's one of those guys that I think everybody just roots for because he's such a hard worker and a great character guy. But he had a phenomenal season coming up to Double A and hitting .293, hitting 7 home runs, you know, and basically, you know, he's a really good defensive player as well. So to be able to get that kind of production from a guy, I mean, he is a little bit older, he's 25, but to get production from that kind of a guy who is going to give you that defense, and he's that guy off the bench, but he hit so well this year, he was playing every day, and he became really one of the key members of, to be honest, a fairly weak offense in the league. But Levlebigian and Christian Lopes were two guys, speaking of another guy who really sort of put himself back on the map in his time in Double A.
And speaking of Christian Lopes, I understand, I don't have the dates in front of me, but Lopes and the Bichette brothers are going to be playing for Team Brazil in their World Baseball Classic qualifier in Brooklyn. I believe it might be this week that it's coming up.
Well, interesting. Time to get to Brooklyn, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Lev Lalbagian, to me, he demonstrates the value of the partnership the Blue Jays have with the Australian Baseball League. And I know, for those who aren't familiar, the ABL is going through some difficult times. They've had a couple of incarnations, and this one was started. They're going into the sixth season now, but when they were started, Major League Baseball was a major funder. I think up to 75% of their operating budget came from MLB, with the hope that teams would develop local sponsorships and that eventually MLB could reduce the funding. Well, I think the ABL's had difficulty attracting crowds. It's had trouble really gaining a foothold in the Australian sporting minds outside of places like Canberra, where the Blue Jays send some of their players. So the league this year doesn't have MLB funding. I don't know how much longer it's going to be operating. It is a go for this year. We don't know which Blue Jays prospects will be sent there. But all you have to do is look at Anthony Alford 2 years ago, and then this past year, Colton Turner and Jason Lev Lalbagian. And Lev showed up in Australia in late August and just started, or late October rather, started hitting, was one of the top hitters in the league, and then didn't stop hitting when he came stateside. And talking to Steve Springer, Blue Jays minor league hitting instructor, about him, he thinks Lev Lalbagian is a major league utility guy to him. He thinks we will see him in that role one day.
Another guy who I've really been following over the years since I first saw him in his draft year in 2013, who finally had a season where he put everything together and managed to stay healthy, was Jonathan Davis, or JD. And Davis, you know, he was 24 in the Florida State League, but he hit, you know, 14 home runs, and he's not a big guy. He's about 5'10", or he's listed even at 5'8", and he's not a big guy, but he's a guy who may be a late bloomer, and now that he's been able to put together a healthy season, I would be really interested to see what he can do coming up next year in Double A if they promote him there. He's had parts of two seasons in Dunedin now. So he's a guy who really did everything for the club. You know, he got on base a ton. His on-base percentage was .376. He stole 33 bases. Yeah. He hit 14 home runs. So he's a guy, and, you know, he was a guy I liked coming out of college because he did have that good eye. He has some power. He's got very strong wrists. And I've just been waiting for him to be able to put together a healthy season and see what he can do. And so I'm actually quite pleased to see Davis this year.
Absolutely. And I can tell you from personal experience, having met Davis along with Connor Green and Alfred, in the spring when I personally went to Alfred and thanked him for helping me buy a paddleboard because of all the page views I get when I write about him, J.D. Davis can look me in the eye. So, yeah, we're saying he's about 5'8". But, yes, once again, a guy who did everything. Another guy in the Dunedin lineup who you have to start thinking about as a prospect, even though he kind of bottomed out in a brief New Hampshire trial, is Ryan McBroom. All of this guy has done since he joined the organization is hit at three levels. And so you have to start thinking about him as a prospect. Ultimately, where he plays is going to be the biggest difficulty. He's not the fastest guy afoot either, but 21, 22 home runs in a very tough home run hitters league, the Florida State League, although I understand home runs were up there a little bit. But there's another guy for me who, man, the guy, we don't think of him, but the guy just keeps hitting.
I completely agree, and again, having spoken to him and interviewed him a couple times, you know, he's one of the nicest guys you're going to talk to. A little bit of a concern this year with his strikeouts. They were quite high, and he didn't really walk too much. And to some degree, I think there's sort of a hitter's curse, where a guy who's really hitting the ball hard is not going to be as selective because he knows he's swinging the bat well. And I think Bradley Jones may be in that category where he was hitting the ball so hard and hitting so many home runs. And, you know, he figures that if he's really patient and selective and takes a lot of walks, you know, maybe if he swings, he turns some of those walks into home runs. And so I think it's like the power hitter's curse that may be affecting Ryan McBroom. And the problem that I see And this is sort of my only caveat for McBroom and being over-enthusiastic about him, because he did have a fantastic season, is that generally by the time guys get to Double A, that type of thing catches up to them. By the time they get to Double A, if they're not a little more selective, pitchers will get them swinging because they're much better at this point. So that's my only tempering thought about Ryan McBroom. But I am very enthusiastic about him. He's a very large person who creates a lot of leverage at his swing. And really, you know, you watch him in batting practice, and he's one of the guys that you just love to watch because the ball just travels off his bat.
Absolutely, and I'm going to throw another name out there as well, a guy who I struck up a correspondence with after he underwent Tommy John surgery. Spoke to him just a few weeks, actually, after he had it at the end of spring training last year. And that's Toronto's own Jordan Romano, who came from missing a year and staying behind to build up his arm strength and work on his pitch count at extended spring training, comes out and throws a 7-inning complete game in his first start. Pitched very well for Lansing this year, would have led the Midwest League in ERA, but didn't have enough innings to qualify. Threw an absolute gem that I charted in late August, where he struck out 10 batters over 6 innings before having to leave for precautionary reasons after he threw a couple of wild pitches in the 7th. But man, that guy came a long way this year, to the point now where you've got to consider him as being one of those power arms in the organization, and a guy who's worth following. So I really love stories like that. He took a bit of a non-traditional route to get to the majors to get to the minors, just by virtue of his birthplace. But he went from playing travel ball for a Toronto team to junior college in Oklahoma to pitching for Oral Roberts for a year, and I think being like third on their all-time list in saves. He pitched out of the bullpen, and now here he finds himself a couple years later in a Tommy John surgery scar in his elbow as a rising prospect in Blue Jays organization. Great story.
Well, I'm very enthusiastic about Jordan Romano, both as a person and as a pitcher. And I find it, you know, really interesting because that Lansing team had three guys who were really bouncing back from injuries. One was Romano, one was another Canadian, Tom Robson, and the third was Ryan Borucki, who has been plagued with injuries. And I've talked to all three guys over the years, and Borucki was just, you know, really mature, head on his shoulders, really happy to see him do well. And watching him pitch over the course of a game, you know, I can tell you he's got a real bulldog mentality. He doesn't give in. He knows how to stay within himself and get the job done. I'm a little disappointed in the season that Robson had. When I saw him in spring training, he was throwing harder than I'd ever seen him. I mean, he was hitting 97. And even amazing some of the other pitchers around there, they're like, this guy throws 97, and they're like, well, yeah, he does now. But he really couldn't harness it the way he did when I first saw him in Bluefield in 2013. And, you know, I really hope that he can take this offseason and find that devastating sinker that he had that just, you know, kept the ball on the ground constantly. This year he was pretty wild, walked a lot of guys, so hopefully now that he's a little further away from the Tommy John surgery, he can start to, you know, find his command once again.
We talk about disappointments if we want to shift gears, and he would be probably, unfortunately, at the top of my list. And I know you and I had talked in spring training because I had seen him as well. He was dominant in an outing against the Canadian national junior team. Now he's facing 18-year-olds, mind you, but man, they could not touch him. And I was expecting big things from him this year, but he found himself pitching in long relief for Lansing by the end of the year. And I know I talked to Jesse halfway through the year about him and wondered, is it just a case that here's a guy who just needs to pitch? You know, he lost a year due to Tommy John surgery. Is he just having trouble getting the command back, as some guys do? And Jesse agreed at that point, yeah, this guy just needs to pitch. But he continued to pitch, and he really didn't find it. So I'm hopeful that he finds it over the course of the winter, because he has an electric fastball.
And, you know, to me, there's a group of relief pitchers who have really really started to take some big strides forward. And I think we saw them this year with Danny Barnes getting the call to the major leagues and Matt Dermody getting the call to the major leagues. Another guy that I want to throw into that conversation, actually two guys. Well, one guy was traded, and that was Colton Turner, who was really dominant this season as a lefty who I think he's been able to get his velocity up from, you know, up to about 93 to 95 miles an hour this year. But another lefty that I think we might need to keep an eye on is Alonso Gonzalez. Alonso, when I first saw him, he was throwing in the high 80s in Lansing, and he was getting hit hard, and he was struggling with his control. But this season in Dunedin, he had a 2.48 ERA, struck out 55 batters in 58 innings, but he did start to walk a lot of guys. He walked 11 in 13 and a third innings in New Hampshire. Was he pressing too hard? I don't know, but from what I've heard reports that his velocity is up even more. His velocity, I saw him in Lansing last year, and his velocity was up to 92, 93. I've heard it's up even more, and it's sitting sort of in the 94-mile-an-hour range. And so for a guy from the left side, if he can find some consistency, he could be like Matt Dermody, who is a lefty who's just coming out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
and making the big league squad, or Danny Barnes, who has been... You know, he struggled with injuries for a while, but over the past couple seasons, he's just been lights out. So I think there are a couple of guys in these relievers that the Blue Jays have coming that I think, you know, Tim Mayza is another guy who's throwing in the high 90s from the left side. He struggled a little bit in a brief call-up to New Hampshire, but has been lights out in Dunedin. So there are a few of these guys who can throw really hard now, and they may be coming to the Blue Jays in a couple of years. And you know, if even one or two of them really hits big and manages to stick in the major leagues, that's, you know, for guys that were selected in the 20-somethingth round of the draft, that's a pretty good return on the investment.
If you want to pick out a theme for Buffalo and even New Hampshire this year, it was their bullpens. Buffalo especially. I know Buffalo on paper looked to be a playoff team at the beginning of the year, didn't turn out that way, but man, their bullpen at least kept them in the contention at least until early August. New Hampshire, a decent bullpen as well. And another name I'll throw out there who was finally healthy, but they treated him very carefully this year. Hopefully the wraps will be off next year, is Adonis Cardona, who... I guess another one of those stories now that I get thinking about a little bit. Here was a guy who hadn't pitched in a year or almost 2 years and has pitched so little, even though he signed several years ago with the organization. Just to have him healthy and complete a full season for the DJs, I think, is a huge step forward. And here's another guy who throws 96 or can touch 96, 97. And there's another guy who maybe with a decent year at New Hampshire next year, if that's where he goes, forces his way into the conversation too.
Oh, yeah. Cardona can touch 98. I saw him at about 97 in spring training. And he was just, you know, lights out. He came into a game, was peppering the strike zone, and his slider looked really sharp. So I think he's another guy who just needs to pitch more and pitch against good batters. And if we're talking about bullpens, you know, there are two more guys that we should also keep an eye on. I think one of them, if not both, got late season promotions to Buffalo after spending the year in New Hampshire, and that's the Smith brothers, we'll call them. They're not
Smith
brothers,
boys.
But Murphy Smith and Chris Smith. And Chris Smith probably has the biggest upside because he throws 95-plus, and he had four games in Buffalo and 57 innings in New Hampshire. He struck out 76 batters in 57 innings in New Hampshire with a 1.89 ERA. And Murphy Smith, all he did, and in fact both of them got promotions to Buffalo, all Murphy Smith did was post a 1.50 ERA in 72 innings in New Hampshire. Didn't quite strike out as many, but he did strike out 69 batters and then threw a scoreless inning in Buffalo to cap off his season. So these two guys are also getting close. Smith, again, probably is the bigger upside of the two because of how hard he throws. But, yeah, so both of these guys are strong arms who can pitch and may be the type of guy that could help a big league club over the next couple of seasons.
And especially with teams now really using their 40-man rosters, and I don't know if there's anybody who has employed the farm system shuttle as well as the Blue Jays have for the last couple of seasons. But with Buffalo being so close, depending on where they are on the road, the Blue Jays, we're growing beyond the traditional 25-man roster and or even 30 men that teams have traditionally employed. Now they're using more and more. They're using the whole roster. Bullpen management, I think, probably being a big part of that. But the Blue Jays of that paradigm have been at the forefront of it. And it's really interesting to me because I know in the past couple of years I have really focused on the starters. And when I've watched a game, I often turn the game off after the starter that I've been charting has left. But this year, more and more, I'm beginning to watch with some of those bullpen arms. So when I watched a Shane Dawson start earlier in the year, I watched Murphy Smith come in. I watched Brady Dragmeier, and it's really time to start to pay attention to these guys because yes, they're knocking on the door, and bullpen arms kind of having a very short shelf life as they do. It's worth keeping an eye on these guys because you never know who's going to pop up there. It's, you know, it used to be relievers in the lower levels of the minors didn't have a terribly great amount of value to them. But, you know, to get back again to a guy like Zach Jackson, he could be in the big leagues in a little bit over a year from what I've been told. If he develops his pitches well enough, if his velocity ticks up, but that, I think that's why the Blue Jays took him. So it's just interesting to see how that's changed just over the past couple of years.
All right, so let's wrap up. I mean, what thoughts do you have about the 2016 season in the Blue Jays minor league organization?
It's a season that surprised me. I think things went better than they did. I would have liked to have seen a couple of more teams in the playoffs, and I know that's just the fan in me wanting something good for the local fans. I know to the organization, yeah, the playoff experience is nice, but the players are getting to the end of a long season, and we're thinking of shutting some down anyway. So I don't know if it's as big as priority to the Major League organization, but it would have been nice to see Lansing, the fans of Lansing, have a playoff team, or even the fans of Bluefield, and to have those players get that little bit of extra experience. But I think all in all, it was a good season. I think the team added to their depth. They stole Reese McGuire and Harold Ramirez, as far as I'm concerned, from the Pirates. And all of a sudden, you're looking at a greater depth of prospects than you had. Definitely you had a year ago or possibly even more. So I think things are on the upswing. Are there a lot of high-quality, high-level, impact-level talents? Well, beyond Reed Foley and beyond a Vladdy Jr. and maybe a Tellez or an Alford, perhaps not. So it's not a system that still ranks in the upper echelon of the games. There's no Yoan Makata there, as far as I can tell, in the system just yet. But all in all, I'm pleased. I think that they're going in the right direction. I'm very encouraged with this high-performance division that the Blue Jays under Angus Mugford have started. I think the team really moving forward is going to try to blend the best of traditional scouting and analytics and sport medicine as well. And it'd be really interesting to see where some of these young players that they've acquired this year and players who came along from last year, to see where they're going to be at this time next year.
Well, yeah, I think it's an interesting time, particularly because of the changeover at the top of the organization. And, you know, something we're seeing is the personnel in the minor league system start to reflect what the new regime wants. And we see Gil Kim coming in. We saw Doug Davis getting let go. We saw Sal Fasano getting let go. So it's really going to be interesting to see what they do this offseason, how many new people are brought into the organization and what direction they take starting next season.
Absolutely. It's I guess it's good for us that there was a change in the organization because we get to see a little bit of a different philosophy. But just one last thing as well. You mentioned Sal Fasano. I have to admit, I was taken very much by surprise with that one. Not surprised that Brian Parker was let go. That's, I think it was a contract issue. I think his was up at the end of July, so not surprising. Doug Davis, even, I think there's a little bit of redundancy now with his role with Gil Kim having come on the scene, and I guess it would be even more so now that they've hired Ben Sherrington, who will be helping to oversee player development. But Fasano, that one shocked me. I know he's revered by players in the Blue Jays organization, and I thought that would maybe signal that there would be more coaches let go, but apparently not. Ross Atkins has said that's pretty much it for now. So I'm puzzled by that one. Sal is a great baseball man, and I'm sure he'll land on his feet somewhere, likely with the Dodgers, where a lot of other former Blue Jays employees have gone. But just wondering if you, before we go, if you have any insight into that one or any explanation by why it happened, because it really caught me by surprise.
No, I don't have any insight. It's the type of thing that I don't think anybody is going to go on the record and comment about, just because it could be contentious, or even if it isn't, you know, even maybe Sal was let go by his own request. It's possible that he may have, you know, not agreed with some of the new philosophies and sort of said, you know what, you know, maybe this is, you know, let me go a little bit earlier so I can start looking for a new job. You never know, really, until, you know, unless you can talk to the guy, and I don't have that kind of relationship with Sal. Although, you know, I have talked to him and I have interviewed him, but I don't think I could go up to him and say, you know, so what really went on there? So I think it's one of those things where we just won't know unless we can get close to one of the principals in the whole situation, and probably even not for a couple more years. So it's one of those things. I think it's a new organization who may have their own way of doing things, and it's possible that there was, you know, like with Alex Anthopoulos, there was just too much of a disconnect between the methodologies that each side wanted to bring to the table.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Thanks for joining us, Doug. That's Doug Fox of Clutchlings, and we're going to post a link to your blog in the podcast.
Fantastic. Great talking Blue Jays prospects as always. Thanks for having me.
That's it for episode number 58 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Doug Fox for joining me. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Jays From Away. Come on back soon and go Jays go. Higher, higher, raise up your